the Fox sisters, mm-hmm. And there were more than just the three, but there are sort of, there's a gap sort of in the family, and they're the younger set.
Well, Maggie and Katie were the younger ones, and they're the ones who heard the ghost first, or, you know, created the ghost, however you want to see it. And then their much older sister, Leah, came, and she was very worldly, Leah, and probably sussed them out a little bit and took them in hand and took them to Rochester when it all went from there. And I think the two wanted, they said they heard a, I don't know if the listeners know the background of the story, but
go for it.
Maggie was 14, Katie was 11. They hear a murdered peddler knocking, you know, this ghost. He's knocking, he's trying to talk to them. So they start talking back with knocks, and this freaks out their mother. And they're in this little farmhouse in the middle of nowhere in upstate New York, you know, boring long winter. So, you know, they say the ghost says this, the ghost says that, and the next thing you know, neighbors are coming. It's a big, big to-do. And I think at some point it became hard for them to take it back. You know, once you tell a lie, it can start taking on its own life of its own, as I show in the book. And that Leah came and saw some opportunities there, perhaps. There wasn't much opportunities for women in those days, and mediums were primarily women. And off they went to Rochester and sort of started this whole idea of that you could communicate with the dead through a person. And that had been around to a certain extent, but not quite in this way. And it became a whole sort of movement. There's a lot of information in the historical record about the women and about what happened, but it's a surface, you know. What was really going on is where the novelist can fill in the blanks, you know, and then just some hard mysteries. Like, when we open the story, there's a body being found in the cellar in 1904. This is like over 50 years after all the events have transpired. And they said a murdered peddler was buried in the cellar, but they dug it up. No, they didn't find anything, but then later on they do. They find it in the walls of the cellar, much later after everyone's dead. And so the question that I, when I came across the story, was like, well, who is the guy in the cellar then? Did somebody put him there? Was he there from the beginning? Was the ghost real after all? You know, this sort of provided the core of the story, this central mystery, which the novelist, you know, myself, I could answer or try to find an answer for, which was fun.
You also have kind of a split thing. There's sort of at the end of Maggie's life.
Mm-hmm.
And she's being looked after by
Mrs. Madeline.
A sort of a mysterious kind of do-gooder who's there to ease her out of...
Yeah, or something. Something's up with her, right?
Yeah. And I hadn't realized that that there was an etiquette in those days to... You had to die correctly.
You did. Yeah, whole books about that. Yes, you had to... Iris Moriendi, I think there was a... I believe it was called. You had to... You have everyone around you. You had to say your last words. You have to be, you know, at peace with your Redeemer and absolve your, you know, and people would go further. They would compose their own funeral music and decide what, you know, they should be dressed in. And it went on. Yeah. It was a sign. You did that well, and that was a good death, right? It was considered a part of your duty.
So Mrs. Mull is supposedly there to help her give a, but she has not been invited.
Not being invited, she just shows up. The only thing in the historical record about Mrs. Mellon was that she was the physician who attended her, Maggie Fox, in her last month or so, and that she was from the Medical Society of you know, a nonprofit organization, charity organization, and that she found her in the garret, and that when she died, she heard, you know, there was all these knockings and rappings that attended her death, as if the spirits had showed up again. To which I said, what? You know, Is that for real? Are you making that up, or did it really happen? And again, it was sort of a question I wanted to answer, and then so there isn't really much. I've, you know, everything about Mrs. Mellon I've made up, and it's my fictional world. I mean, this is a novel, you know. I've tried to, it was interesting writing about this because there is so much information about them. I really had to pick which events and which ups and downs to include, and to make a plotted story and not just a telling of events or showing of lives, right?
Which of the characters, particularly the sisters, were you most drawn to?
Maggie, I think, in the sense of I could relate to her the most. you know.
How so?
She was practical, and I think she was cynical and a bit of a skeptic. I don't know if I'm cynical, is that the right word? Perhaps. But at the same time, she really wanted to believe this, you know, and a little part of her did, you know. So, and she was romantic. She, you know, I really like Maggie, you know. She was fun to write. She was very, yeah. She got caught up in this big adventure and she did her best with it. And, you know, Maggie has a perspective that it doesn't matter who decries, what happens. The secret has almost taken on this life of its own, right? It's like thieves' reasons, you know, people can't think straight, you know. She sees it almost in that sort of way, because time and again, they're almost debunked. Time and again, people will, you know, find proof in this, and then something happens and it just carries on, right? Or gets even stronger. So she starts thinking, you know, what have we done? We've created this monstrous thing that just has a life of its own now, and, you know, nobody can stop it.
The novel is The Dark. I've been speaking with the author Claire Mulligan, and The Dark, published by Doubleday Canada.